live edition of Health Unabashed on Healthcare Now Radio, a show that unapologetically explores promising innovations, the leadership vision, and associated best practices that can transform our sick care system into one that embraces and promotes the health and well-being of people both domestically and around the globe. Hosted by digital health advocate, influencer, and author Gil Bash, the show looks at the thought-provoking ideas, people, and companies who are making a difference. I'm your co-host, Greg Masters, and with Gil, we explore the opinions and insights of our guests on how to connect the dots to create sustainable change. Learn more about the show and the program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And now let's hear from Gil on what's in store for today's episode.
Greg, thank you so very much for that gracious, as always, introduction. And I'm with two amazing people. I've been eager to have them on the program. This is, I think, a great moment for us because, Greg, you and I have talked often about our frustration with the health system. And we have a health system that 52% of Americans are covered by their employee health insurance. Another, let's say, 40-some-odd percent are buying it on the open market. And then, obviously, there's a small percentage that are, sadly, still struggling to gain regular access to care. And I always marveled, having been involved in corporate decisions and serving as corporate counsel for many different companies, I think, and probably our guests could correct me, but I think when you look at the employee contribution to health insurance for a family and an employer's contribution toward health insurance for their employee and their family, I wouldn't be surprised if the average cost per household is about $30,000 a year. That's a considerable amount of money. And if you have a lot of employees, that's a lot of money, not just a considerable amount of money. So Jeff and Laura have been doing something that I've been fascinated with. I've read their articles. I've listened to their podcasts. And I just felt that we really needed to sort of talk about something that we share in common, which is, and I hope Jeff and Laura won't mind sort of like diving in without hesitation, unabashed, and begin to talk about some of these topics. So Jeff, Laura, am I on track by saying the average cost per household for covering health insurance for a household is, I guess, between $28,000 and $35,000 a year? Is that about right?
I think it is. And I actually don't think that actually contemplates some of the true costs when you consider the physical and mental consequences for individuals. And certainly post-COVID, I think those costs are going to ramp up considerably.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting that you said that, Jeff. I wanted to confirm that number. And I'm of the premise that companies are in the health business. They say, well, I'm in the consumer products business, or I'm in the sneaker business, or I'm in the luxury goods business, or I'm in the retail business. I just get health insurance as a way of enticing great people to my workplace. It's a benefit. But, you know, I'm under the assumption, and I always invite my guests to push back and throw in their own ideas. But from my own experience, what I've seen is the average employer kind of tries to control what is a set cost. They know they're going to spend money on health insurance. They know it's going to cost a lot of money, and they're trying to keep the cost down. And so there's a few ways I think they do that. One is shop around for better prices for insurance. Every 3 to 5 years, new insurance company. Okay, got it. One way is limit the amount of benefits they can provide their employees. You know, I'm not going to give you mental health benefits. I'm going to give you X amount of sessions, or I'm not going to give you PT as much as you need. I'm going to limit it to 12 sessions or a certain bundle of medications. I'll limit and try to do pricing on the benefits themselves. That's a way. Another interesting way is, hey, pass the costs on to the employees. I used to pay 80% and you pay 20%. Now I'll pay 75%. You pay 25%. Cost sharing. And then there's this fourth way, Jeff, that I wanted to get into conversation with you, with you and Laura, which is, well, maybe move the system from a sick care system where the costs are spiraling up to a wellness or self-care system where perhaps our overarching cost per household might be going down. And I know that's what you both are doing, Newtopia is doing. First of all, is that premise crazy? Like, is the premise of investing in wellness like a silly idea? Laura, I mean, what's your thoughts about that? You're on the front lines.
It's so much in what you had to say there, Gil. So I want to unpack that a little. The first thing is, as you're describing how a traditional employer procures a benefit strategy, the visual in my mind is an old traditional boardroom table, you know, with an old traditional leadership team checking boxes, you know, to your point, what's almost the least we can do that's going to kind of hit, you know, the mandatory boxes. The world's changed. It's an employee market. And not only is there more of an awareness of how vitally important prevention is on actually managing overall cost of care, but it's equally as important in how it goes to attract and retain top talent. And there is, as we know, a complete wave of resignations happening. As recently as yesterday, Gil and Greg, very large marquee employer who said they delighted that they are now waiving the 90-day wait period for access to benefits because they were losing great candidates. Now think about that. Great candidates are not accepting a job because of waiting 90 days. Equally as much, we know great candidates will not sign or will leave a job if the benefits are not actually going to be usable and meaningful to them, their families, and their lives. So employees are more savvy. They are more discerning. Employers are increasingly more sophisticated at understanding the role of prevention. And so everything you spoke to is in, it basically means we all need to step up, whether your role is on the actuarial side of figuring out how prevention plays into ultimately cost of care, whether your role is from the health system figuring out better access to care and experience, whether your role is on talent acquisition, figuring out how you're going to line up the best team to go and do what your core business is, consumers or whatnot. It all comes back to, we have to be more aware about health. It plays out in every way. So I'm right there with you, Gil.
Yeah, I'm troubled by all this because, you know, whenever you sort of engage, like who owns this cost and the challenge in the corporation? And I'm not talking about necessarily smaller companies. Let me first focus on big companies that really have processes and infrastructure, that have large financial service teams on place. They have huge human resource groups on place. And you said something, Laura, that I thought is true and disturbing at the same time, which is check the box. We've got to provide benefits. It's a good benefit package. It's a good cost. We're going to offer it. Oh yeah, we're going to throw in an employee assistance program if you have some sort of like emotional challenge and you need to speak to someone. There's a wellness benefit. We give $300 a year. You want to join a health club or buy running shoes, you can just put in the receipts for that. We'll give you $300. I almost feel that companies unintentionally, kind of throw up their hands and just say, I checked the boxes, I've done the right thing, we look structurally competitive. But and Jeff, I really would appreciate your counsel here, because I think there's a disconnect, a big chasm disconnect, which is they're already spending millions and millions of dollars, on health insurance for their employee. And no one says, look, when we look at the data of people who are now type 2 diabetic this year compared to last year, when we look at the rate of weight gain of our employees based upon maybe high blood pressure or high cholesterol or respiratory conditions, COPD, a history of smoking, and weight can let you graduate into pulmonary disease, all of this, nobody's sitting down like a chief internal health officer and connecting the finance department with the HR department and saying, I'm going to pretend number now. We're already spending $25 million on health insurance. Maybe we should invest $3 million on active programming with our employees to move their health dial to a better place. Am I just dreaming here, or aren't they in the health business and they just don't get it?
I think it really comes down to the business, understanding the business and delivering on both sides. And right back to your first point, Gil, when 52% of employers are providing, 52% of employees are receiving insurance from their employer, those employers are in the health business, first and foremost. And I think it would be easy to agree amongst ourselves that in the other side of their business, their mandate number one is to deliver a customer experience from the first, first point of contact, whether that's a product or a service, that delights and it keeps retention of that client or customer for as long as they possibly can. But yet, connect that dot. Today, if they also believe that they're in the health business, then the same objective should be true for their employees, which is the most valuable resource from day number one, healthy, productive, and happy, and keep that customer life cycle, just like the employee life cycle, running as smoothly as possible. The disconnect, to your point, is that because they're not necessarily seeing themselves in the health business the same as in their business, what's happening is sick care is the best, the best comparison I can make is that right now, by trying to treat folks who are ill, their employees who are ill, they're really intervening in the customer life cycle when there's a complaint coming into the complaint department, and they're managing the complaint as opposed to trying to establish this wonderful experience from point number one. And the disconnect is that if that's how they ran their core business, they'd be out of business. But guess what? By running their health business that way, given the costs rising year over year, and just the unsustainable $4 trillion and 19% of US GDP, their health business is going to put them out of business as well by not aligning these two concepts.
Yeah, I think a doctor, to your point, now back to the American Civil War and up into the early 20th century, a great surgeon was judged by how much blood they had on their apron. I mean, you didn't want to go to a surgeon who was wearing a clean surgical gown, clearly an inexperienced surgeon. Now, a surgeon was judged by how much stuff were at that time, how many limbs they cut off, sadly. So they were judged that way. Then we all of a sudden understood, wait a minute, it's about infectious disease and preventing infections. So obviously we moved to a more preemptive model to prevent disease from occurring in the first place. You know, we tend to think, and I'm certainly a digital health advocate big time, but we tend to think that there's an app for everything. And that's the solution. I made an app for that. And you know, in my own COVID experience, they talk about the COVID-19, which is obviously COVID-19, but also many people added 19 pounds to their waistline during COVID. I actually used the time to lose 19 pounds during my COVID experience. But I have to say, though I did consider initially one or two of the apps and people were suggesting, there are many popular app-based programs that are available today. I had a behavioral health counselor, sort of like working with me, my wife, who, you know, is very, very attentive to proper diet and exercise, and you've been sitting for 50 minutes, you've got to get up now and walk around and all this. And I wanted to get both of your points of view, because I there's something about embracing a pathway to better health that I think is takes some mindfulness. It takes behavior modification, which is difficult, but I think we need to explore it and invest in it. And then it does take some sense of measurement. You have to know, where are you? Where are you with your vitals? And certainly I traded my Apple 6 watch for the Apple 7. There's no comparison, I want to say. I can't tell the difference between my Apple 6 and my Apple 7, so I don't have a comparison yet, but that's neither here nor there. But I don't think that it's only about technology. I would appreciate your points of view on that, because are we relying too much on innovation and not enough on engagement?
You know, I would say we have to understand what problem are we looking to solve, because as we know, we're not going to solve everything. But I think when you think prevention, And you drill down, there's a certain group of folks for sure. Technology is here, digital is here, app, but there's not always an app for everything, to your point. But just some statistics to, I think, sober the discussion a little bit. So according to IQVIA, which is the Institute for Human Data Science, I'll short track the analysis, but basically, give or take over the course of a period of time and over about 10,000 apps, there was roughly around a 30% download rate. Out of the 30% that downloaded, only 10% of those downloads remained engaged after 30 days. So you start to think about that and port that over to one of these large employers. When I get it, it's very attractive. If I've got a large budget, and we've just done our own benefits review too, so I've been on that side of it too. And I'm trying to figure out, how do I have something for everyone that makes me feel good? It's not going to break the bank. An app approach is fabulous. It's going to do that. But if I start to really apply that, and it looks really cost effective, and the ROI looks potentially marvelous, particularly some apps, and I won't mention names, that are delivering almost unbelievably phenomenal results for being on certain restrictive diets, great. The issue becomes, what happens after the 30 days when you're sitting with 10% who are still engaged, or when you have that initial kind of, I've stopped drinking coffee, which I try periodically. It never works, by the way. I can do it for a couple of weeks, right? And then I have more than ever and more headaches than ever. So when the relapse kicks in, right, what then? I think that's the part that you're talking to, Gil, of sometimes we need more. And as employers in health, are we really thinking about what is the right comprehensive strategy to make sure that there is accessibility in the form of an app for sure for the broader based population? Is there more intense access to care for those who are seriously ill? Is there a great drug strategy? We need it all. And what is the strategy for those that, left alone, are not going to engage in the app? They might not even be part of that initial download. But what do they need? And I think for most of us, when we've already gone on a journey through self-discovery, emotional discovery, health discovery, and we've all got stories we can share, I bet you, almost 10 out of 10 times, there was a human somewhere in that picture, right? And particularly if you start looking at sustainability, so change that lasts over time, because it's only change that lasts over time that's ultimately going to hit your cost line item or showing an ROI. We know health moves with dollars, right? And if you can't link it back to dollars, so either what's happening is there's buys happening because it's inexpensive and the results look fantastical, right? Or there's really deep analysis on showing that over time, the evidence-based data is there. And that's obviously where Newtopia positions itself, is it's evidence-based. It's unsexy work of rolling up sleeves and habit change one by one, one habit at a time. But the human part is crucial, but it should be with an app approach. I don't think we'd ever advocate no app. It's here to stay, but it's just thinking through comprehensive approach that will ultimately hit that triple aim, right? Access, experience, and cost of care.
Yeah, you know, Laura, last week we had a great guest on the program, Dr. John White. Dr. White is the Chief Medical Officer of WebMD, and he's just come out with a book. Greg, you'll correct me if I'm wrong. It's called, Take Charge, Reducing Your Cancer Risk. And it's a very popular book. And he wrote the book because beyond the genetic causes of cancer, there are lifestyle and environmental causes that actually trip off those genetic risk factors. And so the Take Control is essentially mirrors exactly what you and Jeff have been sharing just now, which is, you know, you need to take charge. You need to take charge of your life to some extent. I do know that there are 8 different types of cancer, I believe, that are actually attributed toward weight gain. So it's this is all scientifically proven. I want to get back to the topic that we started with, which is companies in the health business. Now, Jeff really pounded down on that. I want to hit that nail again, Jeff, if you don't mind. Companies are really in the health business in the millions because they're already spending money for health insurance. It's kind of a given on the cost line. They're trying to sort of control that because, you know, unlike talent, people, and you have more productivity, you expect to either manufacture more or bill more per hour or do more or sell more or something. There's something about that fixed line of people that produces revenue. health benefits are kind of seen as like sort of an expense line. It's like, I've got to do it. And yet, you know, every time I write the check to the payer, there's that moment of pain, especially as the check seems to get larger and larger. So why is it that someone inside these major corporations hasn't said, wait a minute, I have a big idea. Instead of shopping around for new insurance, limiting the services we provide our employees, transferring costs onto the employees instead of our paying for more and more of it, why don't we actually invest? This is a little bit like, oh, I'm going on a road trip and I've packed the car. I'm not going to put gas in the tank. I'm just going to pray I get from point A to point B. Why isn't someone, whether it's a CEO or a CFO or a chief people officer or a chief benefits officer, say, look, the only way we can really take, to John White's point about, you know, cancer risk, the only way we can take control is to reduce their health risks and get on it and not do it as a, if you feel blue, call this employee assistance number. Now, if you want to exercise, great, here's a $300, you know, sort of like expense line for you. Why don't companies get more engaged in dealing with probably the developed world's biggest social problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Gil, I'm going to answer this in two ways. I would say there are some that are attempting to do this, and we are blessed and fortunate to be partnered with them. But I would say the broader challenge is that the same way companies aren't dealing with this, neither is the entire health system, right? In that health insurers, whether they're self-insured employers or private or governments, find themselves intervening as the concept of primary prevention doesn't exist any longer. It's largely been absconded by physicians who have turned into diagnosed and prescribed experts in very specialized treatment. But it's assumed that individuals are going to come up with this on their own. And I think to some extent, this onus that it's not my responsibility, keep in mind, I'm not in the health business, I'm in the something else business. It's not my responsibility to offer.
I make sweaters with little polo players on them. I got it.
That's right. Or I design shoes, or I make electric, you name it. That's our business. And it's the business of my employee to figure out how to stay healthy when effectively the casino is rigged against that ever happening. It's almost an impossibility the way we live today. And so what happens is that most employers are intervening too late, as is the government, as are insurers, and they're investing once someone's being diagnosed and there's condition management abound. That's incremental at best. In fact, I suspect the economic incentives are to keep people just on the edge of chronic disease, because that's where everyone's sweet spot is to make an awful lot of money. And so the challenge is that it needs leadership and it needs a bigger, broader way of thinking to say what we're doing is unsustainable, and it is. And it requires a rethink on primary prevention and how it's delivered and whose role in society it is to help usher that forward. And I would contend that the employers who are actually healthcare businesses are a beautiful group of individuals to make that investment. Quick second challenge is always the perception that if I'm not going to keep my employee employed for long, why should I make this in their primary prevention and in their health when it may not yield the benefits to me, but in fact to someone else? And I think that in many ways, that timeline has been a bit of an anchor to that kind of leadership and that kind of forward thinking. And in many ways, I think there's demonstrable proof to suggest that inside of a year, those investments can pay off, bear fruit in terms of ROI and outcomes. And so I think it's time for that chestnut to go away and not be the excuse why employers who are in the health business are focusing on primary prevention as a key tenant of their healthcare business.
The employer has a massive responsibility and there's more they can do. And I'd shout out that a couple who are starting to really innovate in how they're doing it. So there's definitely some giants in the room who have some great innovative thinking, and you can actually see a difference in terms of, I think, their retention rates of their employees, their NPS scores, and many other data points that would signal something good is happening. But let's not forget part of the system, the health systems, right? And the health plans, it's not just the employers in isolation, right? And if I think through on the health system side, I'm in several conversations and talking about, you know, how Utopia is an absolutely proven through our partner in cost of care reduction through prevention, that message doesn't great. On the surface it does, but when you actually get into the behind the curtain conversations, the problem with that is when we reduce cost of care, sometimes it means less money to be made by some of the folks in that ecosystem, right? And so I think, you know, we got to talk about that 10-ton elephant, right? That we all want to stand at the microphone and say, you know, we're all working towards the triple aim, but are we really, Gil? What do you think?
I'm sort of disappointed because it's all evident. Right now, doctors get paid to do stuff. Hospitals make money by being empty. Pharmacies are built with a pharmacy on the back so that you're drawn in to buy shampoo and light bulbs and greeting cards on your way to pick up your capsules and tablets. Or the health system is based around the system. The system is the customer of the health system, not us. And I hope that during our conversation and program, sort of a few light bulbs have popped open and that people are starting to say, wait a minute, maybe to be a real progressive employee-centered enterprise, I need to create an environment that really supports my employees. Just as I want to make sure that they have state-of-the-art technology, I don't want them using old laptops. I want to make sure that they have, you know, current laptops. I don't want them using 3G to communicate. I want them to use 5G. We've covered a lot of ground today. I think we could obviously, you know, cover more. But I think for me, the takeaway is, one, there are people like you that are trying to frame the conversation, enlighten companies to the possibility, striking the sort of partnerships that need to be forged, so that people start to have the conversations that need. This is a great conversation. Laura and Jeff, I want to thank you for joining us on the program today. And Greg, thank you as always for guiding us along, for being there for us. Health is everyone's business. Thank you all.
And that's a wrap for today's broadcast. We want to thank our listeners for taking the time to tune in. You can learn more about Health Unabashed on the program page at healthcarenowradio.com. We stream live weekdays on Healthcare Now Radio at 2:30 a.m., 10:30 a.m., and 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Or for you left coasters, 11:30 p.m., 7:30 a.m., or 3:30 p.m. Pacific. For previous episodes on demand, check out the Health Unabashed show page on healthcarenowradio.com. Let's keep the conversation going with Gil and me on Twitter by connecting with us at Gil_Bash, that's B-A-S-H-E, and Greg Masters, M-P-H, Greg with two G's, or via the hashtag Health Unabashed. And for on-demand listeners, please consider liking and subscribing to the show on the podcast platform of your choice. Until next time, stay unapologetically passionate about improving health.